Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, July 5th, 2012. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. Well, this week, no chill brewing. How does it affect your beer? In our second experiment recorded at the National Homebrewers Conference in Seattle, homebrewers Bob Stimsky and Noam Shalev share their efforts comparing beer chilled in traditional ways against beer that was brewed with the no-chill technique. If you're new to home brewing and would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through both basic and more advanced brewing techniques. And our 2012 Brewers Logbooks, believe it or not, still in stock, just barely. You can follow me on Twitter. My username is basicbrewing, all one word. Also, you can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/basicbrewing.james. We have a Basic Brewing Radio and Basic Brewing Video page on Facebook as well at facebook.com/basicbrewing. Thanks again to everybody clicking on the Amazon.com associate link on our basicbrewing.com site. If you don't know how it works, here's how it works. If you want to go shopping on Amazon, come to basicbrewing.com first and click on the Amazon banner, and that will take you to Amazon.com, and you won't even notice any difference. You'll just shop, and then at the end of your shopping, when you check out, we will get a cut of what you have purchased. So we like that because it doesn't cost you any extra. It just takes one little effort of clicking on that banner on our site before you go to Amazon, and we appreciate your support greatly. We also have associate links for Brew Your Own Magazine and the American Homebrewers Association on our site, too. And you can find our apps on the iPhone and Android podcast stores. We're on the BlackBerry podcast directory, and we're on the Stitcher app as well. Now, I'm recording this on the 4th of July, of course, which is got to be the quietest 4th of July on record, at least around here. It is devastatingly dry around here, and we're under a burn ban, so no fireworks at all, at least in the city limits. And I sincerely doubt that there will be very many fireworks outside the city limits because, you know, the farmers aren't going to want their fields and pastures to go up in flames. So I hope it's nicer where you are and that you are able to get together with some people that you care about and have some fun. And we'll plan to shoot off our bottle rockets after it rains a bit. If it ever rains again. Whoo, it's hot and dry. We got a lot of great content to get to, but before we do, I wanted to read a couple of things from the email bag. Blake writes in from Texas, where it's probably hotter and drier than it is here. Blake says, I just finished the podcast where you interviewed the guys from Keg and Barrel and their informal homebrew contest, Outlaw Brewing in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. Their courage in hosting this event in a state where homebrewing is illegal is refreshing. Blake says, we hold a similar event in Kerrville, Texas, to help spread the good word on homebrewing. Our laws are not quite as restrictive in Texas, but we still have many issues to overcome. The Kerrville Chamber of Commerce has a fundraiser the second weekend of August, and we held our first homebrew competition last year. Blake says, this year should grow hopefully to 40 entries in four categories, pale ale, India pale ale, wheat or wit, and porter slash stout. Blake says, if you were able to mention our event, Kerrfest, on your podcast, I know it would be helpful. So I hope so. If you're in or around Kerrville, Texas, and want to know more about the homebrew competition down there, drop me a line and I'll get you in touch with Blake for the details. This next one comes from way up north in Canada. Chris writes, 3 months ago, I made a huge change in my life and moved to a remote wilderness community of about 2,500 people in the Northwest Territories. I'm now living in a town called Fort Smith. We got one of those down here. And trying to re-outfit my home brewery, seeing as I flew to my new home and couldn't bring my gear with me. Chris says, since moving here, I've met a few beer geeks, and a few of those are interested in homebrewing and or mead making. Of course, the trick is trying to get equipment and ingredients up here without running a small debt. I'm writing to ask if you've ever heard from anyone else in the Northwest Territories, particularly those in the South Slave region, Fort Smith, Hay River, Enterprise, maybe as far north as Yellowknife, which I'll be visiting in a few weeks. I would love the chance to connect with other local homebrewers. So there you go. If you're brewing up in the Northwest Territories and want to connect with other brewers around you, send me a note and I'll introduce you to Chris. That'd be cool. It's been a while since we first talked about brewing a bag here on the show, that Aussie homebrewing technique. To me, it was a radical departure from more traditional all-grain brewing, but I tried it anyway, and I liked it, and I still brew with brew in a bag. I brew with a mash tun for certain batches, but, you know, I like brew in a bag as well. My eyes have been opened to a new technique. Well, since then, or maybe around the same time, I learned of another Aussie brewing technique called no-chill brewing. It's where hot wort, straight from the kettle, boiling hot, is put into a plastic container that's designed to withstand the heat and allowed to cool naturally, sometimes over several days. Now, as with any new technique, there is much skepticism about no-chill brewing out there on the interwebs. Now, I encourage skepticism, so I think that this is healthy. But, you know, opinions without evidence amounts to superstition, in my opinion. So before I made any conclusions myself about no-chill, I wanted to see and taste some data. Well, that's where Bob Stemsky and Noam Shalev come in. You've heard Bob on the show before. He's from Wisconsin. Noam is from Israel. Noam and his friends Dagan and Shahar probably traveled the furthest to be at the Homebrewers Conference in Seattle. I gathered up Steve Wilkes and Andy Sparks, and we all got together in Bob's motel or hotel room. He was wasn't a motel. His hotel room. To put the no-chill brewing to the test. Well, here we are in the room of Bob Stemsky up here. And we have some friends from Israel. We have an international delegation here along with our regulars. Let's just go around and introduce ourselves and make it easier on me. How about that?
Steve Wilkes.
Andy Sparks.
Noam Shalev.
Dagan Barilan.
Bob Stemsky.
Shachar Klein.
Welcome, everybody, to Bob's room. Now, what are we doing? We're doing an experiment. Y'all have some, even though you're worlds apart geographically wise, you have something in common. What is that?
Well, we're brewing the baggers, and we no-chill.
And what does that mean?
Well, we brew in a bag. That means one vessel, full volume, with a mesh bag brewing. And beyond that, we don't chill the wort. We stick it in a plastic jerry can, and we let it naturally cool down.
And Steve, you had some questions about this earlier.
Well, yeah, I was concerned about the lag time between the safe temperature and the temperature where all the crazy bugs like to get into it before the yeast gets in there and does its thing. So, but it's my understanding, James said something about that you guys cap it off and seal it, and so I didn't understand that. I thought you just kind of slapped the lid on the boil, you know, vessel and then walked away for a couple of days.
Well, I've done that too. And other people have done that. If you sat in on the talk on Brewing a Bag, they mentioned Pat Hollandale. He told me that he's an Australian, and he did a lot of work on Brewing a Bag and No Chill. He said he's done that. And I've done it once or twice. I slapped the lid on the brew kettle, put it outside overnight, and pitched the yeast in the same kettle the next morning. It works. I can't say that the shelf life of the beer was very long. But that's not what we do when we do no chill. We use a plastic jerry can, we sanitize it, and we run the boiling wort into it, and we sometimes squeeze as much of the oxygen as we can out, cap it off, turn it on its side so it all gets, you know, all that boiling wort, and then we let it cool down.
Now, this sounds dangerous to me. I mean, I guess it could be if you mishandled boiling wort, right?
It could be, but no more than it would be with a pot that you knock over, you know, being not careful. When you put it in there and seal it, the only thing that's really dangerous is maybe when you squeeze the air out if you got your shorts on and you burn your knee. Otherwise, it works perfectly. We normally let it sit for quite a length of time. I mean, I shouldn't say it that way, but I let it go for a day or two. I might let it go for a month before I use that wort. Mm. You can store them up. You could actually have two or three, and you're just waiting for a particular yeast to get ready. You keg something, and you take that yeast, the yeast cake, and then you put the wort right on top. It's just like you're buying it in the store.
Now, how do you guys get it from the kettle to the jerry can? You don't rack it, do you?
No. Well, I don't know how a gnome does it, but what I do is I have a hose that I bought at the local homebrew supply that'll go up to 250 degrees. Mm. And it goes right on the end of the spout, and I put it right into the no-chill container. And I just open my valve, and it runs right in. Is that how you do it?
So you have a kettle with a spout on
it? Yes, yes.
I have a kettle with a spout on it. I use a silicone hose with a brass quick disconnect. I sanitize everything, and then I run it straight into the jerry can. I've spoken to people in Australia that do siphon. They have a stainless auto siphon or something like that, but I'm not that, I don't do that.
I was going to say, they're the ones with the blisters on their lips from sucking the thing.
I don't know how they do
that. So there are, of course, skeptics out there who say that, oh, you can't do that. Because you'll capture, you know, DMS precursors, and you'll get a beer that tastes like corn if you put the boiling wort in the jerry can and you seal it, because those compounds have no way to get out.
That's a common misconception, but with the modified grains we have nowadays, you really don't have those precursors to any extent. So when you do, let's say, a 90-minute boil, and I do normally 90-minute boils now, everything's gone, it's evaporated, and when it gets capped off in your no-chill container, there's virtually no DMS in there. And I've done some pretty light beers and some pilsners, and no one's ever caught corn in there.
I've also heard, or I've even thought myself, you know, when you're doing a nice hoppy beer, you want to chill that down as quickly as possible because you don't want those volatile, nice, aromatic hop compounds that they give you the nice nose and the nice flavor to evaporate out. You want to cool it down as quickly as possible. So can you do a nice, flavorful, aromatic, hoppy pale ale in no-chill?
Well, that is an issue. There are ways around it. Usually what I do is I move all the hop schedule up. So a 20-minute hop would go in at 5 minutes. A 0-minute hop I usually put into the jerry can. You could always dry hop or make a vodka extract like Bob does. I've done that with I've made a hop tea with warm water and put it in the keg. So there are ways around it, but yes, it is an issue.
So what other advantages does it have that we may not think of, other than just the time?
Well, of course, the time. Where we're from, water is scarce, and I just hate the idea of, you know, pouring out all that water. Of course, you could, you know, recapture it, but it's just a lot of water to waste.
Yeah, and on the water issue and safety, I think more times than not, when I was using my immersion chiller, I wasn't careful, and when that water comes out of there, you know, it comes out as hot steam. I burned myself two or three times, and I've never burnt myself using this method. You know, and I like the convenience of being able to take my beer or my wort and put it in my keg, my no-chill container, and then putting it aside, because I've had, when I think about it, I've had three different beers or three different worts sitting in a no-chill container waiting for the proper yeast. They didn't last that long in there. I mean, one I used within a couple of days, but I think one of them was in there 3 weeks waiting for a yeast.
Wow.
Yeah, that's another advantage I can think of. When I make a yeast starter, I'm usually making it with the wort that's making the beer. So I'll pull out about a liter or two of wort from, you know, sometime during the boil, cool that down, start my starter, and then pitch it into the chilled wort 2 or 3 days down the line. So I'm not putting in DME or anything else in my beer.
I guess I want to just kind of ask a question that, or re-ask a question. Are there styles that you guys find work better, or styles, you know, that you really have really great success with this, and then other styles that you might shy away from?
Not really. I haven't. I go to the darker beers, and I go to hop bombs. I kind of lean that way. But I've never found anything. I've done some real light ales that I've never had a problem with. I never noticed. It's an interesting question.
Well, I'm on the other side of the spectrum. I don't do hoppy beers, and I do mostly light lagers and, you know, light ales. I haven't had any issues either, even with big beers, small beers. I can't think of any beer I wouldn't no chill.
Do you see any difference in the clarity of your beers? I mean, if you think, if you put hot wort into a container, seal it, and let it settle out, it seems like you might be able to get a clearer wort into the fermenter, maybe, than if you were to, say, do a whirlpool and try to let it settle in the kettle and then, you know, try to be patient and then rack it off into the fermenter more quickly.
I found that very true. When I let my beer settle, and I usually use Orflock or any of those Irish moss, within a day, and I would say most of the time I do quite quickly, they separate so well that when I draw off my beer, it's crystal clear into the fermenter. In some respects, I actually, near the end there, I'm, of course, trying to get as much out as I can, but I'll take a little bit of Trub because it's almost too clean. Yeah. You know, I'm looking for the Trub to be a nutrient for the fermentation, and I've had it so clear, it just amazed me, but, you know, you've got to have a little bit of Trub, I think. You know, that's my opinion.
Yeah, I've heard that some of the protein helps with the yeast nutrition.
Well, I agree with Bob. When I'm doing a really light beer, maybe a lager, then I will go to the trouble of siphoning off the clear wort, when the rest of the Trub has settled in the jerry can. Otherwise, like you say, it will eventually settle, so I'll just pick up the jerry can, shake it, you know, to aerate, and then pour into the fermenter, Trub and all. You know, the yeast will feed on it, and it will settle out. I'm not really worried about the Trub.
You guys have been quiet. Do you have anything to to add to the discussion?
Well, I don't have the experience with this method. I'm just familiar with the work Noam is doing. But I was thinking, actually, you don't have a cold crash, right? A cold break.
I guess not. It's all in there in the jerry can.
Yeah, that's a good question.
I don't even know what cold break is.
Well, and there may be people in the audience that don't know what it is either. But when you, and correct me if I'm wrong, Andy, but when you put the wort chiller in there and you first run that cold water in there, you see the protein starting to coagulate around the chiller, you know, almost immediately. Yeah, and you guys don't have that.
No, we don't. No, it's without cold break.
But do you see as it chills? I mean, can you see through the jerry can? Can you see in there to see if it does actually, if the proteins do start to coagulate after a while? Or
no,
I can't see.
No. Mm-mm.
Well, it's a good question. The question is, will the cold break form, I don't know, at a later stage in the keg, in the bottle? I have no idea. Really don't know.
But you are able to get clear beers out of this process, so something's going on.
We always cold crash our beers.
No, but the cold break, I guess that without a good cold break, you may have chill haze later on, so probably... Well, I don't know. I'm not familiar with your beer that well, and maybe it's a good thing to check. But chill haze may be an issue in this method.
It could be, but my beers are as clear as when I did three vessels. So, I guess I'm just as bad at brewing Bang as I was at Three Vessel.
It's no worse anyway.
Oh, no.
Well, the only thing I can think of that, you know, that might be drawback to no chill, maybe also having to do with chill haze or you know other elements in the beer is shelf stability. That's what people talk about, but my beers never last that long, so I don't know. Really, I mean, 6 months or longer, that kind of shelf stability, not weeks or short months.
So you've designed an experiment. What have you guys done?
Well, we both made double batches, and we followed normal procedures. We put our immersion chiller in, with 10, 15 minutes left, and I drew off, well, it turned out to be 4 gallons of no-chill and then ran through the immersion chiller 4 gallons. So it was the same batch. It was just split in half.
My experiment was a little bit different. I used counterflow chiller, a plate chiller. I brewed 20 liters. I ran 10 liters out through the plate chiller and the other 10 liters into the jerry can to no-chill. I left it to naturally chill for about 24 hours or maybe a day and a half, and then I transferred it to the fermenter and pitched the yeast. So they were about a day apart pitching the yeast, and then they both went into the fermentation fridge for 10 days, the same temperature. I used a half a bag of dry yeast for each half batch.
So in theory, the only variable between these two beers or sets of beers is the chilling method.
Yes, that. Otherwise, we were pretty stable on everything, I think.
What styles did you choose?
Using a black IPA that I've been working with and kind of bumping it up to make it a heavier beer. So it's a little experimental. Mm. And I like dark beers because then I don't have to worry about people saying it's not clear enough.
I always say, if you don't like the way my beer looks, close your eyes.
Well, I brewed an amber ale. I tried to keep the recipe as simple as possible just to eliminate, you know, other variables. Basically, two row and a little bit of crystal. Nothing spectacular. It should have been more hoppy we'll taste it and we'll see. It was supposed to be an American amber. I think it's more like an English brown.
But. Well, we will decide which category it is afterwards. We will pass judgment. So what should we pause? Anything else that you guys want to talk about the process we missed? Anything, Andy? What we're going to do is pause. We're going to divide the beers up, and we're going to do taste one, and then discuss maybe, and then taste the other and discuss again, and we'll just see. We're going to try to do this blind, and to see if we can guess which is which, and see if we can tell any difference.
We need 3 glasses per person for blind tasting.
You want to do a triangle?
If you want to guess, try to guess. You can't guess between two. You need to guess between three. That's the proper way to do it, right? But not everybody needs 3 glasses. I mean,
we're brewing the baggers. We do everything simple. We do it as simple as possible.
So let's pick up 2 judges, those two probably, and give them 3 glasses.
Okay, we can do that. We can get Land, Andy, and
Steve,
I'm sorry, 3 glasses, and let them do a triangle test, and everybody else will just, you know.
Okay.
That's a compromise.
Triangle test, you need to put this, this is one, and these two are the other.
Right, one of these things is not like the other.
Mix up, right. It's a proof that there's no.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. All right, so we got some work to do, so we'll turn this off, and then we'll come back. Okay, first of all, it is a tasty beer.
Well, thank you.
And I don't know, what would you call it an American brown? What would you call it?
That sounds like a good way to go. I mean, it's got a nice roasty finish. It's a little light ale kind of beer. Sounds good to me. Maybe you ought to ask the guy that brewed it.
Well, he said he didn't know what it was. So.
Well, it was meant to be an amber, but it's not as hoppy as it should be for an American amber, and it's a little bit darker than I expected. So I guess it's a brown.
It's good though. There's no defects that I could detect. But the real question is, are they different? Andy, you and Steve did the triangle tests. See if what did you think?
Well, I mean, this is a good way to try to figure out whether I can tell whether one of them is different. They all taste the same to me. When I'm pushed to decide one over the other, I pushed one out. I think it's different. I'm hoping I'm right, but I'll be honest. It's just a shot in the dark, really.
Yeah, same. I mean, I will say that one of them I think does taste just ever so slightly different, and I guess I'm hearing the same thing from you, but boy, these beers are very close to being the same beer.
We need to hear that it's the same one that you're thinking that is different.
So
which one do you think is different?
I think this one's different.
The one with the triangle. And you, Andy?
I had the one with the triangle separated.
Okay, but this is not correct.
Wow.
No, the circle one was the one that was chilled.
Yeah.
And the other ones,
the two others were no chill. Yeah.
Okay, so the triangle's no chill.
And
the star is no chill.
Yeah.
Well, I mean yeah. I felt like, now I'll tell you what I thought when I tasted it. I thought the one that I picked had a little bit more bouquet. It had a little bit stronger nose to me. So when I would rough it up, you know, in the glass and smell it, it just seemed to kind of pop out a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And then it seemed like it had just a little bit more of a raisiny, you know, chocolatey thing going. But I'm like Andy, it was so close. It's like, you know, I just had to take my best shot, and it was obviously wrong.
Bob, what'd you think?
I couldn't tell the darn difference. It was just simple as that. Of course, I was halfway through both beers before I remembered I was supposed to be testing them. Once I remembered that, I really didn't find any difference. They were great beers. I wouldn't have no problem drinking this at any time.
Say your name again. Shahar?
Shahar. Yeah, I can't tell the difference. Same beer.
Okay, I don't know if it was a matter of carbonation levels. But the one, for me, the one with the sticker was a little, just a teeny bit sharper. And the one without the sticker, to me, was a tiny bit less bitter. And like I say, maybe it was the pour, you know, maybe.
Yeah, maybe in the beginning of the bottle or the end of the bottle, I don't know. Mm-hmm. And I thought that maybe the difference that you two picked were because of the, I don't know, if it was in the beginning of the or the end of the bottle.
Yeah, it could be temperature, you know, just even a half a degree could give just a slightly different thing to your palate. I think that for me the lesson in this is that I'm always amazed at how many ways there are to make good beer. Mm. And you guys have shown me today a new way.
Well, we're not done yet. We got Bob's beer too.
Well, but his beer's going to be good. I'm not worried about it.
Let me just say one more thing. Because they were small batches, I was contemplating whether or not to bottle condition or to keg. And I actually corresponded with James as to how to bottle just a sample. In the end, I decided I had two empty kegs, so I decided to keg both half batches separately. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, counter pressure fill out of the kegs. So there is no sediment. There shouldn't be too much of a difference between the beginning of the bottle and the end of the pour. Okay. When I did initially taste them after carbonation, and there could be differences in carbonation between the two kegs, I did pick out maybe a tiny difference with the chilled beer. The no chilled beer would have, maybe it was just me convincing myself, but the no-chill beer was just ever so more bitter, which it should be because it sat on the hot wort for a little bit longer. But again, it could be just, you know,
what was the
self-rationalization.
Yeah. So which was which?
The one with the label was the chilled beer. The one without the label was the no-chill.
So I said that the chilled beer was a little more sharp. I mean, I'm talking minuscule. They're both had a nice hop presence, I thought. I thought they were both good beers, didn't you?
Yeah, I thought they were really good. I think it's kind of interesting that Steve and I actually picked the same beer as the alt beer. It would be nice to have a third person doing the triangle test and see if that was just completely random that we just happened to pick. But one out of three, that's a little hard to do. You know, I mean, it could have just happened, but it's interesting that we picked the same beer as the one that was out.
I'll add myself to the next thing.
Yeah, we have another round to go.
There are 1,800 homebrewers out there. We could just grab one.
They've got plenty of beer.
Oh, yeah.
You just open the door.
And their palates are shot by now anyway.
That's my excuse.
Yeah.
Palate's shot.
Yeah. Okay, so now on to the second round.
Can we rinse?
Let me
yes.
Okay, now we've tasted Bob's beer, and as I said, there were equal levels. Equal. Oh, this is a big beer, Bob. we asked Bob, "How big is this beer?" And he said, "I don't know."
Exactly, almost.
Yeah, exactly, almost.
So anyway, as I said, there's equal levels of diacetyl in both that I tasted. No, it was very good beer.
Yeah.
I thought it was really nice. Andy, you're on the spot again. Or should we start somewhere else?
I couldn't tell anything on the mouth, but on the nose, and following what you said before, I was looking for, I guess the chilled beer would be a little more
aromatic.
Nosy, aromatic. Mm-hmm. And so I couldn't feel anything on the mouth, but on the nose I felt like the circle was a little bit more aromatic. And the beers are very powerful, and I like it very much.
Yeah, good beers.
Yeah.
So do we want to... We'll wait.
They don't announce
yeah.
it.
Okay.
So you want me to go next?
Yeah.
Okay, I chose the triangle as the different beer.
How big are these beers, Bob?
I think about 9%.
Well... they're getting bigger all the time.
the one with two triangles on it.
and there's an elephant. And this one did taste just ever so slightly different, but these are the same beer as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I was. I'm in the same boat. I went back and forth through them, trying to find something that I could pull out and say this is different. Couple times I thought I could smell something, but when I'd go back, I'd swirl the beers and take another sniff, a little sip. In the end, it was really a push. I finally picked one of them. It was the one with the star on it, which is interesting because
it's interesting because now we have... One of us is probably right.
Right.
One of us is right.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good system you have.
Yeah, one gets to be right.
No, but this kind of goes back to the last one we did where Steve and I maybe just accidentally both picked the right one, you know, or not the right one, but the same one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And this time it's kind of interesting that we all three picked a different one.
Okay, you want to know who's right?
Yeah.
Okay, and the prize goes to Andy.
Yay!
Hey.
Hey.
Okay. What was it?
It was the
no chill or the chill? It was the no chill. The one with the circle was the no chill.
All right. Not the circle.
Andy gets some points.
Well, I think what it really proves is that I guessed the right one. You know, I mean, if it's pretty tough to say that I actually picked that because it was so different. Because, like I said, I really struggled to find a difference. And I ended up just kind of picking one. I think I probably just got the luck of the draw.
Mm. Well, I can taste it clearly now.
Of course.
I would think that it would be interesting to do the same test with an IPA or with something very aromatic.
But I have to say, I'm very surprised because Bob's beer is very bitter. It is aromatic. It's a dark IPA. I would have expected the no chill beer to be a lot more, you know, have a lot more aroma. The chilled beer to have a lot more aroma, but apparently not.
What was the process?
You didn't dry hop?
Did you dry hop?
I put 2 ounces of Amarillo in both.
In dry both. Hopping.
Dry hopping.
And
yeah.
Did you do a zero, a flame out hopping?
No, I don't do that anymore. Okay. I don't think there's any. I think when you do a 0 or a 5 minute, you're throwing your hops away. Mm-hmm. Because.
Mm-hmm. Especially no chill.
Especially with no chill.
Yeah. You're throwing it away. So
maybe flavor. So you can do 5 minutes before flavor.
I don't think so. What I've been doing lately is I've been putting in my bittering hops, and that's basically it. If I have a 40-minute, 15-minute, 10-minute zero, I put that all in dry hops. Mm. I've put 4 or 5 ounces in dry hops.
And it's boring.
Hops.
What you do during the boil?
I just drink. I just drink. I have no problem with that.
Do you dry hop in the keg? In the keg?
No, not in a keg, because I've had a couple that clogged. So I throw them all in the fermenter. Mm. And I find that way. And I've done some tests on it. But to be honest, just like everything else, I start drinking and I forget what I was doing. But I've tried to do the regimented, as we've always done, putting hops in 5 minutes increments and all that. And then I just, the next time, I'll dump them all in a dry hop. And I can't find a difference.
So do you have a sort of formula that you've worked out where if you would have put an ounce of this hop at 10 minutes before the end of the boil, you add X amount in the fermenter as dry hop, or?
I've been following whoever makes a recipe, I follow it to the letter, except that I just take everything with the exception of the bittering hops, and I usually always just put it in the fermenter. As a dry hop. Mm.
It's a lot of hops.
Oh, yeah, it is. It is. And I don't know about chill haze being caused by that or anything else, but I do know that any time you put an aroma hop in and you boil it for more than 5 minutes, you're losing mm-hmm. almost everything, mm-hmm. yeah. and then you're not getting anything out of it. Mm-hmm. So I have started to do that more where I just push everything as a dry mm-hmm. hop. Mm-hmm. I just don't see it. Someday we'll have to do an experiment with it.
But I think in mm-hmm. this beer, if you put 5 minutes before flame out, some hops, you get in the flavor, and it will add to this beer.
Don't forget that we're talking no chill, so 5 minutes will be 24 hours before.
That's
temperature
not true.
Drops down to 70.
That's not true. The temperature drops, the first bit, you know, the hot bit, drops very fast. Okay. And then, you know, the danger zone that they talk about, that's where it sits. But you're not isomerizing any bitterness at that at that range of temperature.
So flame out, or 5 minutes before flame out, you get plenty of flavor, and this beer would benefit from this flavoring thing.
Well, I can second that, because my beer that we sampled before had Calypso hops and Amarillo hops, you know, all through. We're not getting any of that aroma or flavor of those, you know, special hops. It's all, you know, bitter. Or maybe a little bit of flavor.
We need to do a new experiment for that.
Yeah.
Where you add, not add, add flame out. Because you don't know what... probably you put some very little. You didn't put a lot, right?
I don't have a recipe.
We're going to do it. You know we're going to do it. We're not just talking. We're going to do it, the experiment.
You have to come back to Philadelphia next year.
No, we're going to do it in Israel and...
Send me a bottle.
Israel.
Yeah,
you
either send me a bottle or a plane ticket. How about that? Well, this is. It seems like I was going to ask another question, but Bob's beer has knocked it out of my head.
That's why I call it a sipper beer.
A sipper beer, in my lingo. That you've got some more there.
Well, I've poured all my samples together. I'm getting ready to be on camera in a little bit.
That's
I need
right.
some help. Yeah. I drank all of mine.
Yeah, this year's Pro Night coverage is brought to you by Bob Stemsky's Ale.
Yeah, all the pictures are going to be a little tilted to the side.
I'll open each interview with, I love you guys.
Oh, well, what else? I mean, I guess we've learned that for these particular beers, that the chilling process did not make a difference from one to the other. Mm-mm. I mean, I'm pleasantly surprised.
Well, I have to say that if we were going to you know, make it, you know, determined conclusion, we would have to taste the same beers again, you know, 4 months or 6 months down the line and see how they evolve, because I don't know if they would evolve the same.
Mm. That's a good point. Yeah. I mean, you know, maybe there's a little something lurking in one or the other that, I mean, because one might make the argument that if you let the beer sit, how long did the beers, the no-chill beers, sit before you pitched?
Mine only sat for maybe 24 to 38 hours, 36 hours.
That was the same, about 24 to 36 hours.
But our Australian friends, who we converse with, you know, on discussion forums, some of them argue that they keep their no-chill jerry cans for up to 6 months, and some of them say that the beers improve. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the logic is, but if you like, I can send you a link.
Well, you know, that you could make arguments on both sides of the issue as far as the risk for infection, because you could say that if you chill the wort quickly, then the window for infection is less, and therefore, you know, it's better and safer. You could also say that pouring boiling wort through a hose into a sanitized container and then sealing it up is safer than having an open or an almost open, mostly open or partially open kettle, where the wort is chilling for, depending on the weather and the tap water, 15, 30, 45 minutes, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Well, the only, you know, several times that I've actually chilled beer, especially with an immersion chiller, and it's always been because I'm brewing with a friend or, you know, at some brew event, I'm always shocked at how long this kettle is standing there open with someone standing over it and, you know, mixing the wort and whirlpooling and breathing. Yeah. And my beer is goes straight boiled into the jerry can and it's closed shut. You know, it's not getting any contamination from the air.
Yeah. At my house, you got dog hair, you know. Yeah. You got what's left of my hair. You got...
you know, you got me. It's getting less of a problem every day.
Yeah. Right. I'm taking it. Nature's taking care of that.
Obviously, you drink while you brew, so you
don't drink that much, But another thing is that if, God forbid, your jerry can was infected, you'd know about it pretty quick.
Oh, yeah. That'd be the sound, sound that you would hear.
You'd see it. It would expand, and then you know you have to toss it. It hasn't happened to me.
Now, we've done a canning discussion with Andy, so do you have any thoughts along those lines?
All right. So if we go back to the canning episode, and we remember that wort is one of those things that actually needs to be completely shelf stable. It actually has to be heated higher than boiling, and that's why we use a pressure canner to get it to that point. So technically, while this is obviously works very well, you guys have had lots of good experience with this. Yeah, technically, it's not a sterile environment in the jerry can. It's a sanitary environment. We've cleaned it as well as we can and killed what we could, but technically, there could be something in there. And the one thing, the reason we do in the canning process, we drive the temperature really high, is the one thing that sneaks by us is botulism. And and because it can work in an oxygen-free environment where we get the thing closed and you run off all the oxygen in advance, obviously this is a pretty, it's a pretty long shot thing. It's a pretty rare thing is going to happen. And like you said, you're going to notice that the jerry can is starting to blow up because any sort of activity, biological activity, will create off gases and start to, you know, do that. So you'd know pretty quickly.
That's why you don't buy bulging cans in the supermarket, because something has gone wrong.
Another note. I'm sorry. One more note. Again, our Australian friends, and, you know, we only know from rumor, in Australia, they sell fresh, what they call fresh wort kits, where a commercial brewery will brew a batch, and they'll run off the hot wort into a jerry can, and then they'll market it. They'll sell it. And the home brewer just needs to take it home and pitch the yeast. I guess, it works.
What's the fun?
You get cheaper.
The guy that you talked about that doesn't know how to brew, it would
you get cheaper beer. Well, there was a kit that it seems like you gave me. You had gotten some kind of kit that you shared with me way years ago when I first started brewing. Something somewhat similar.
Right. One of the Canadian companies that does the winemaking kits, I'm not sure which one it is, but they marketed for a while a wort kit. Basically, it was a big box like a wine kit that had kind of a condensed wort in it, but you still had to dilute it to some degree to get it up to, a 5-gallon batch. But, it was one that we got as a sample, and as I remember, that it didn't really work out so well for you.
Well, this was the one I had was in a bag. It was like in a box, in a bag? It was like this bag. It looked like a pillow when it blew up, because what you did was you added water, and then you pitched the yeast in there. And this thing inflated, it had a spigot on it, and it was supposed to pressurize and then carbonate. You sound familiar?
Yeah, I remember that years ago they had those. I think you're supposed to hang them inside of a closet, if I remember right.
Next to your wife's clothes.
Yeah, and then after a couple of weeks you had beer.
Or divorce.
Yeah, I resisted that one. I didn't.
Good for you.
Yeah,
I tried it. It didn't work out too well.
Are you sure you were just using a smack pack and just didn't know what you had?
Yeah, it would fit in the palm of your hand. It smelled really yeasty. Well, this has been a lot of fun. I mean, the science is fun always, but then to have good beer to go along with it is also fun. Anything else that anybody... Last call for last comments.
Unless you want to taste more micro brew from Israel on air, then I guess that's a wrap.
I'll pretend the microphone is on, and I'm always up for trying beer.
We have a couple of beers more.
Awesome.
Well,
all
I
right.
I do just want to say again. I've already said it, but I'm just amazed at all the great ways there are to make beer, and I would never have thought of doing this, and I'm very impressed. Really, it's great.
Andy's going to start stocking jerry cans in the store.
Yeah, from that World War II supply store.
We use the jerry cans we're using, the wort jerry cans.
Extract. LME. We use liquid malt extract jerry cans. That's how it's shipped. I don't know how it shipped to
strong
Andy.
Strong and they're food grade, and that's what we use.
Well, my logic is it's food grade, and any flavors that might be still in there are beer. So,
One thing I might mention is that you just can't take any old container that is meant for water and use this. You have to have a heat sensitive one.
That's a good point.
Usually, you can order them online, but they're food grade. They're thick walled. I've checked, they're good up to 250 degrees and so on. I had a friend one time that just got a Walmart water container, and it had a little
melted
thing, a little thing to let the air out and everything. And he just went, put it in there, and that baby just collapsed like crazy. It was no good. So it really has to be an approved container.
That's good. I'm glad you said that. A moment of sobriety at the end of an otherwise happy show. No, thank you all for doing this. This is wonderful. We need to do it again, or something similar. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, James.
Thank you, James.
What a great time! Thanks again to Bob and Noam for their work, and thanks to Steve, Andy, Dagan, and Shahar for helping to conduct the experiment. We went out to eat some sushi after that, so we had a lot of fun together. I think a plastic jerry can or something similar is in my immediate future. I was very impressed by the beers and by the experiment. And again, I appreciate all the effort that went into pulling that off. It was very eye-opening. I was expecting a big difference between the two beers, the traditionally chilled and the no chilled. And as you heard, there was no appreciable difference in our taste buds. So very impressed. By the way, Dagan owns a nano brewery. I believe it's in Tel Aviv. And we had some of the beers. He brought some cans of beers.
And we really liked them. I was especially impressed by one called Baby Ale, a super light pale ale. Now, before you turn your nose up at it, despite its only weighing in at 1.8% ABV, it was very tasty. It was fresh and not weak tasting, as you'd expect and as you might have experienced from, you know, so-called super light American beers. This was really a tasty session beer, and I'm going to have to get the recipe. Now, everybody in the group that we had in that hotel room, not motel room, is talking like they want to get together in Philadelphia for next year's conference. And I hope we all do. I'd love to spend some time with them again, and I'd love to do another experiment. If you like, I did anything. They did the experiment. I was in the room when it happened. and by the way, I'm going to put Noam's recipe for his American Amber Ale, along with his brewing notes, out there as an attachment on our app and as a PDF on our website as well. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com. Please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Be sure to check out our DVDs, Extract Brewing and Partial Mashing, Stepping into All Grain, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits. You can find them all on our site, along with our Brewer's Logbook, which is available to order for a short period longer. We've got combo deals to save you a few bucks if you want to buy more than one DVD at a time. You can check out our shirts in the store, too. You can see a listing of the fine folks across the country who sell our DVDs on basicbrewing.com. If there isn't a vendor in your area, you can order them online in our online shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We appreciate the support there. Our featured products this week that were purchased through the link are Sticky Bumps Air Freshener Blueberry and Gringo Bandito Hot Sauce 10-ounce bottle. Thanks again, everybody. Remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries there. Just click on the Amazon.com logo on our site the next time you feel like Amazon shopping. We greatly appreciate your support. And don't forget, you can also join the American Home Brewers Association or subscribe to Brew Your Own Magazine through an associate link on basicbrewing.com. So until next time, until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer, production help for Basic Brewing Radio, and our website is provided by Kelly Dodson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.